Irreverent. Entertaining. Cool.
You're listening to On the Air with Dr. Pat Allen. Empowered communication. Right here on LA Talk Radio.
And we are here on LA Talk Radio. I want to thank the Want Institute for bringing us to be here with you each and every Thursday live, where you can get in the hot seat with Dr. Allen. I want to thank LA Talk Radio for broadcasting us on multiple channels at multiple times, but you can only talk to us live on Thursday. Dr. Allen, we have a very special guest tonight. It's Dr. Robert Storr. I believe he is on the line right now. Robert, are you there?
I am here. Yes. Yeah. Thanks for having me on this evening.
Welcome.
Thank you for doing this, Robert. I want to ask you a few questions so that our audience, which is international, will have the benefit of the marvelous 30 years that we've known each other.
That's outstanding, Dr. Pat. Look forward to it.
You were an intern in the Want Institute, which sponsors this radio show, and you were doing it to become a licensed marriage family therapist in California.
That is correct. Over 30 years ago. Can you believe that?
I believe that, but you have been shifting since then into the field, sadly, of suicide, which is going up and up in our sad virus world. And I want to know why you shifted and added suicide to your marriage family therapist license.
Thank you for asking, Dr. Pat. About 10 years ago, actually 10 years ago this last June, I was the unfortunate, I received the unfortunate news of the death of my partner at the time, Troy Dunn, to suicide. I was a therapist at the time, as I still am today. And what I recognized in that particular time and moment was how little we as marriage, family, child therapists often know about suicide prevention. It is getting much better today, and I know a tremendous amount. What I did at that point in my life while I was working on recovering from the grief is I changed the charter of my course, as you know, and decided I was going to go into suicide prevention and that I was going to do everything I could to understand what made people suicidal or what contributed to an individual that brought them to suicide. And also, I wanted to work with people who had lost someone to suicide. So I made the decision in the bottom of the hospital basement where my office was at the time in Long Beach that I would get a job. And as God would have it, I received a job offer about a week later as the clinical director of the second largest suicide prevention center here at the United States, right here in Los Angeles. Shortly after that, my boss was promoted and I became the director of the Suicide Prevention Center, a center which takes over 100,000 calls from people who are feeling suicidal and provides services, outreach, prevention, and education to the community here in Los Angeles, a community of over 11 million people. So I learned everything I could learn. I taught as many people as I could. I co-authored a best manual on how to work with attempt survivors to prevent the future possibility of a suicide. I began to work with lost survivors, and eventually after that work, I learned of the veteran community's issue with suicide, that in 2019, almost 14% of the suicides in the United States, of the 47,000 suicides, around 6,600 were veterans, members of the veteran community. Mostly now we are aware of that, so I shifted my work to include the veteran community, and this being Suicide Prevention Month, first and foremost, thank you for all the work you're doing to continue to support the community, but also to bring this to light. So I wanted to offer a few things today. And number one is the most important message, which actually the first suicide center began here in Los Angeles in the late 50s, actually was started by a couple of veterans. What they discovered, that people who died by suicide did not want to die, but in fact were trying to live with the pain that was created from a mental health condition, might have been a crisis, a loss, a relationship issue, a job issue, but certainly most likely a neurological and mental health issue. and that if we brought this to light, we'd begin to understand what made people suicidal, and we would take away the judgment, the stigma, the condemnation, and instead we would start to look at suicide like we would look at heart disease or diabetes, a preventable condition if, in fact, we did the right assessment of what the risk factors were. So that's the work that I've been doing on. I'm happy to be able to share that and some resources today for the community that's listening to you. And it is an international issue, obviously, and it is an international issue. There are over a million suicides worldwide, and we are getting better at reaching out both to survivors as well as people who are struggling with the issue.
So what does one do when someone you love does or says something that sends you into a tizzy because you don't know what to do? What do they do?
Well, first and foremost, thank you for that question. The idea that people have a preventable condition that they are afraid or embarrassed to talk about is the main issue. And therefore, those of you listening, for those of you who may be suffering from the thoughts or ideas, there is an 800 number you can call and talk to somebody. If you are concerned about somebody, you can also call the 800 number. It's not just for people in crisis, but there's a National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, which is an 800 number here in the United States at 1-800-273-8255. You can Google that. It's 1-800-273-8255. What you want to do, which is what I learned to do when I was working with attempt survivors who were afraid or frightened that they couldn't stop themselves from wanting to die by suicide because of the mental health condition. First and foremost, you have to be the one that tells them it's okay to talk about it. So if you ever hear a loved one, a colleague, a friend, a family member saying that they feel like they don't want to be here, their life's not worth it, or like they feel as if they can't find a way out of what they feel trapped in, if they feel hopeless or helpless, or they feel like they're a burden or that they don't belong, first and foremost, you want to make them comfortable talking about it, because in 95% of the time, we can de-escalate and support someone to recover from what may be just a momentary crisis if, in fact, we can make them comfortable to tell us. And the reality is, in the statistics and research, that the majority of people who die by suicide do their best to tell us. The problem is we're just not used to listening to the language. My particular partner who died before he died was in a particular crisis, and he said, I found the solution. I found the answer. What I didn't ask him was what that answer or solution was, and that answer was eventually to take his life. So we have to listen very carefully to a language that we usually are not familiar with. We have to be the ones to say, are you thinking of killing yourself? Are you thinking of dying by suicide? Are you getting so desperate that you don't want to be here anymore? And if we're afraid to do that, we can get on the line to the Suicide Prevention Center and ask them how to do it. We can get our friend, our loved one, our family member on the line to do that. One of the things I found out in working with attempt survivors is they were afraid to call the Suicide Prevention Lifeline. They were afraid because, one, they were afraid they would be locked up or their rights would be taken away or they'd be hauled up by the police to the hospital. That's not the case. The Suicide Prevention Lifeline only uses a rescue as a last attempt if someone can't keep themselves safe. Even if they can't de-escalate the call, they encourage the person to find a family member or a friend to take them to the hospital. So usually a rescue is the last resort. They will do everything they can, which they are quite successful, again, at almost 90, 95% of the time of de-escalating and then supporting the person at getting them into treatment. So it's really important that if you're suffering or you know of somebody who's suffering, that you connect them to that resource. When I worked with attempt survivors and found that out, that they didn't want to call, I would sit in the room with them and I would actually call the Lifeline and we would talk to the volunteers who would always reassure them that they were there to listen, they were there to support, they were there to find resources available for them. And if it's a veteran, they can call that same number, the 1-800-273-8255. And if they press 1, they will be transferred to the Veteran Crisis Line. The advantage for veterans or people who have veterans and their family members, if you press that 1, that will connect you to the VA crisis line, which will connect you to services specifically for veterans. So there are a lot of services available, but the main issue is we have to, 1, reassure and know everybody it is preventable. 2, we have to do our best to make it safe for the person to talk to us about it. Now, on the other hand, 3, if you've lost someone to suicide, sometimes you are not able to save someone's life, but you can do your best to see if you can get that person that's still alive into support. But if you've lost someone, you should never feel guilty, bad, or like as if you should have done something different. That's a natural part of the grieving process. And there are multiple resources for people who've lost someone to suicide. The American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, that's AFSP.org, has a suicide survivor support group in almost every state in the United States. And in November, they will do an international survivors of a suicide loss throughout the United States as well as throughout the world. There are groups in almost every country of the world that provide this sort of support. They usually have therapists listed in the area as well that can support people. The thing to know, if you've lost someone to suicide, you also may be suffering from your own post-traumatic grief, or what we call prolonged grief syndrome. It's not a grief cycle that follows a normal cycle that resolves itself fairly quickly. You have to do a little more work, and oftentimes you need help so you don't sink into a deeper depression or more anxiety or thoughts of suicide yourself. So those are just some of the tips that I hope will be helpful to people to really reach out to the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. And again, that's 1-800-273-8255 to look at afsp.org, O-R-G, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, for additional resources. And of course, they can always reach out to me if they would like personally at rstohr, R-S-T-O-H-R, 2015 at gmail.com or 562-810-1040.
So, and I want to add that you, my dear friend of 30 years and professional colleague, have agreed that unless things interfere, that you on the first Thursday would be willing to do what you just did so magnificently.
Thank you, Dr. Allen. I would be delighted to be a part of your show to continue to spread the word. There is still a lot of work to be done, and we know it is preventable if the people listening recognize that they're now part of that safety net for people that may be suffering, or if you're suffering yourself, that you know you can get help, that it is available, and that we can go on to live perfectly happy lives. So I'm happy to come back monthly and remind people, more than happy to spend a few minutes with you, answer any questions, do whatever I can to help support the cause and help support the amazing work that you and Kelly are doing out there. So thank you for that.
Thank you. And to those of you that are listening, if you have a question, write it down and keep and use it. We will use it and pass it on to Robert so that he can answer it. Okay?
That's great.
Kelly?
I think that's perfect. I would love it if we could get some calls going on at Robert's next visit that he could answer. I have a question.
What?
I lost my nephew to suicide, my sister's son. And I noticed that she, on the anniversary of his death, seems to spiral down for about a week before it. And I tried to stay with her a lot during that time and talk with her. Do you find that happens a lot with people?
Thank you, Kelly. First of all, let me tell you,
survivors.
Yeah, first of all, let me tell you how sorry I am for you, because I know that impacted you as well as your sister, and for the loss of, I'm sure, what it was, a beautiful young man. It does happen. Grief seems to have a particular timeline, and oftentimes people don't recognize that at anniversaries or birthdays or particular occasions where they had a significant ritual, ceremony, or connection to the loved one, it will bring up right around the time, and it's often right not exactly time, and maybe a week before or a couple of days before or a little after, but it will bring up the feelings. It's almost like the psyche, our psychological makeup, has sort of a timeline in it, and it remembers. And what it's trying to do, which is really important, in the stages of grief, when we first lose someone because of the nature of the trauma, we generally are shielded from the immense amount of pain that it creates. But what happens is that pain is still stored within us, and we have to continue to work it out either with a therapist, a friend, a colleague, or a group. And also our psyche will, like our body, take a natural healing process and do its best to repair itself. So it will come around on holidays or particular anniversaries. The thing to remember about that is you can do something actively to reframe that, to make that a more positive experience. I find often with people who've lost someone to suicide, they remember the trauma and not the individual. So what I recommend is around an anniversary, do something special that you loved about your loved one. Bring up a picture, talk about them, bring a family together, or maybe you and your sister can share fond memories of what an amazing person this was. Because oftentimes we have trouble moving beyond the tragedy that we had, and it keeps us stuck in the grief. So it's important to repurpose that grief into something positive to the best of your ability during those times.
This was the first year that she pulled out his Batman mask that my mother had made for him, and she pulled it out. And this was the first year since he passed that she just didn't break down. She held it in her hands and she said, "I love you, Biebs." And then she put it back in its special place. And I felt like that was almost like turning a corner for her.
Yeah, that's amazing. What generally happens, and it's strange, is the thing to know about people who've lost someone to suicide, it is a different grieving process. Normal grief for somebody is anywhere from 2 to 3 years. With suicide loss, because of the trauma associated with the loss, there's now a Center for Complicated Grief out of Columbia University, and they've determined and actually came up with a diagnosis that individuals can go into prolonged grief. And the first 2 years, oftentimes people don't feel the grief to a certain extent, or they're afraid to feel it. But you're correct, around 2 to 3 years, it starts to subside a little bit, and people can bring out pictures or memories or mementos, or they can talk more about it. And it's important. This kind of the myth about grief is that somehow it will be resolved and go away. But grief's a reflection of love. And if you love someone very much, the grief isn't going to go away. It sort of keeps you attached. But you can, again, repurpose or reshift it to be something positive, an expression of love like that. So it's beautiful to hear that. I'm happy for your sister-in-law. And just a reminder, if you go to AFSP, go ahead.
This is the 12th year that he's been gone.
Oh, the 12th year. Okay.
Yes.
It's taken a long time. I'm on 10 years, and most of it is subsided, but it's still there, and it is a heck of a lot better. But it also, if you go through other losses, which we all will, other relatives or friends or family members, often it can re-trigger, it can sort of activate the grief again. But that sounds like good practice, and I recommend for everyone that you check out the AFSP.org website, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. They have groups in almost every state and in some countries listed where people can find support. Loss survivors tend to do better when they're with other loss survivors because the grief is so unique, and it tends to pull people out of the culture, and there's not a big space for people who want to share it unless they're also in that same category. So thank you for bringing that up.
Thank you, Robert. You're a treasure and an angel here on earth.
Yes, I appreciate
thank
that.
Thank you so much. Okay, God bless you.
Appreciate being here. You all have an amazing show. Dr. Allen, such a pleasure. Always appreciate you, our friendship, our 30 years, and the amazing work that you do. Kelly, thanks for facilitating that. And for those of you listening, please take care of yourself and seek help if you need it. Take care, everybody.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye now.
Now we will return to our regular format, which is questions and answers based on almost anything you want to bring up. I thought that was wonderful what he did. Pardon?
I think it was so wonderful to have Robert on, especially with everything that's going on with the withdrawal from Afghanistan. I really appreciate it. Caller, you're live on the air with Dr. Allen. You are in the hot seat. Do you have a question?
Hi. Yeah, I do. Hi, Dr. Allen.
Hello.
What's
happening in your world?
I feel like I need you to whip me back into shape.
Oh, whip you?
Or like get me back into. I feel like you're going to tell me I'm being impatient.
What shape are you falling out of? What have you got a divorce?
No, not.
Has somebody left you?
No, not that dramatic, but a man's been dating me, and
good.
we met on a dating app. So we FaceTimed a couple times, and we live in the same state, but we live in different cities that are about a 45-minute plane flight. So it's still long distance. But he comes to my city for work all the time. So I've seen him now. He's probably taken me out on 6 dates, and one of them was an overnight vacation at this resort. And we have so
much
fun together.
Did it include intercourse? Did you make love?
No.
Okay, so it was a platonic overnight slumber party.
Yeah. And we have so much fun. In the time in between, I don't hear from him that often. And I asked if
Do you date other men? I like people to date three men because one is overcommitted, two is either or, and three is diversification, which is a good technique.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you doing to distract yourself from missing he's not your boyfriend, he's not your fiance, he's not your husband, he's your date.
Mm-hmm.
So the way to handle it is to have two others for dates.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
Have you been flirting, looking in the eyes of men you're attracted to and smiling?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I have a date on Sunday,
Excellent.
I go out and social, and I guess my question is, so
what is your question? Because you sound like you're answering it.
Yeah.
What is your question? Are you there? Kelly, where did anybody go?
I'm not sure. Maybe we can get her back, Dr. Allen.
Okay.
It looks like her call dropped. So hopefully we can get her back in. Let's see what's happening.
So should we take another call?
Well, we're going to get whatever we get here. I think Sam's doing it here.
I'm not sure what happened. I was disconnected.
What happened was the phone call dropped, and it's that time of the year. There's cycles of electronic discombobulation. Somebody mentioned it, and virus something or other. Anyway,
no, the sun just had a large sunspot just blew. So actually, two of them. So it will interfere with the everything. And Mercury's in retrograde, so good luck with it.
Mercury's in retrograde.
That's what I was thinking of.
Okay, so let's blame it on Mercury's retrograde, and you'll ask the question.
So the last time I saw him, I asked to talk. I asked for time to talk, and
you made an appointment. That's one of my tools.
Mm-hmm. And
for his convenience.
Mm-hmm. And said that it was about sex, and I used your wording. I had called him before and just said that I am happy that he wants to have sex with me, and I feel very attracted to him, and I really like him, but I'm not willing to have sex unless I'm in a committed, monogamous, long-term relationship. And
did he ask you for making love?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, he did. How wonderful. And you thanked him for asking.
Yeah. Yeah. And
you gave him the boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
And he said yes or no.
Well, he said he was like, well, that makes sense. He kind of like didn't, it kind of caught, he didn't know how to really answer. And he
you
said,
know
well, what we have.
Very few women follow my directions because they want friendships with perks, which is very mm-hmm. masculine and isn't built and suited for the female psyche. We women
right.
bond to men's bodies that we have chemical attraction to. So, and that bonding can take up to 2 years to get over. And in the meantime, you're a spinster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm really looking to get married.
So will you please, when you're in between, he has 8 weeks in between dates before he's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And your job is to be passive, patient, and vulnerable unless you
yeah.
want to be the man. Do you want to be respected by him or cherished?
No, cherished. Cherished.
Well, the only way to get a man, not a boy, a man, the only way to get a man to cherish you is to be virtuous. And you know mm-hmm. why? They hate you when you're virtuous, but they know it's the right thing to do, because virtuous women do not screw around. And
right.
so a man, when he wants to make love to you, says, oh, you'll be okay, it'll be okay. Just let me in, oral, anal, or vaginal. And if you do mm-hmm. let him in, he is afraid that he can get in too. So the more
right.
virtuous a woman is, respectfully, thank you so much for being attracted to me, but I know I have chemistry for you, and I don't want to fall in love or bond to you prematurely. When you're ready to call me your girlfriend or your fiance, and we are working towards getting married in the near future, then I will negotiate making love. Everything
mm-hmm.
else is affectionate sex, which animals
right.
practice regularly, and humans that practice it regularly don't marry any more than animals marry.
Right.
So do you
okay,
want
yeah.
to be married?
Yes, I do.
Then remember, men marry virtuous women. They have sex with other women and pick cherries until they want another different woman.
Yeah, and he said that what we have, he was like, well, you know, well, this is pretty casual what we're doing right now, because he does live out of town. And then he kind of, it was almost like he was talking out loud, and he was like, well, you know.
He was. What he was doing was thinking through his moral code. Thinking
okay.
through it. You brought
yeah,
him
was,
up somewhere in church, somewhere book. He had heard about virtuous women. Men get what they want by going after it. Women get what they want by saying no to that which would interfere with getting it. And I
mm-hmm.
want you to know this. Having casual sex, if you're not a prostitute making money, or you're not a masculine woman who just wants to get sex, is not ever going to get you married well.
Right.
Men marry virtue because they know if he can't get in, he can't get in either.
Right. Yeah.
Got it?
Yeah.
So are you going to date in between?
Yeah, he did say, he was like, well, I like what we're doing, whether or not we're having sex.
That's appropriate. What?
Is that a good sign for him to say that?
He does not want to have sex. He wants to make love to a woman. Making love is physical, mental, and emotional. It's spiritual. Mm-hmm. Having sex, every animal knows how to have sex.
So him saying that he wants to hang out with me regardless of if we're having sex is building a friendship.
What he said was he feels guilt-free. He's not guilty about using you as a sex object. My last book is It's a Man's World and a Woman's Universe. Men love buying, selling, and owning things, and they will do that over dinner.
Mm-hmm.
It depends on how cheap a woman is. But a cheap woman will have a fling of sex like an hors d'oeuvre, and then she'll get to see him guiltily go off. And years later, if he comes back, he'll say, you know what? We should never have had sex. We should have waited to make love monogamously, continuously, with our goal of mating or marrying. Now remember, mating is monogamy, continuity, and longevity, but there's no legal document. Marriage is mating with a legal document. And marriage is best suited for women and children marrying a man who wants a family and wants to be responsible for it.
Right.
Do you understand?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what are you going to do?
Date other people and wait patiently?
Good girl. And report back to us.
Okay, thank you so much, Dr. Allen.
Thank you for calling.
Have a good day.
You too.
Thank you, Paul.
Bye. Thanks.
So the call-in number is 323-203-0815 to get in the hot seat with Dr. Allen and talk with us tonight. We're looking forward to it, so buzz in. Until then, let's see what's going on with our switchboard and see if we've got another call. We do. Caller, you are live on the air with Dr. Allen. Do you have a question?
Hi, yes, I do. Hi, Dr. Allen.
Hi,
Kelly. How are you?
By the way, men are welcome. Men are welcome. Go ahead.
So I think I'm following the theme of the last caller. There's a
what
man
is
who is...
Are you missing somebody?
Well, there's a man who's dating me, and I haven't heard from him in about a week.
A week is nothing. He has 8 weeks to reach back to you. I want you to understand, when a man commits to a relationship, he is taking on responsibilities. If he's a man, he wants to be respected for taking on responsibilities. So he has 8 solid weeks to ruminate and decide if he wants to fall in love with you. You see, the truth of the matter is, women are in love with themselves. A woman who has to feel good to do good, especially sexually. A man wants his needs met, which is sex, but he is not into thinking for the future unless the rarefaction. Some of them do, but most of them are looking to get laid. And so for that reason, they take you to dinner And then they say, let's go to my house. We'll watch TV and have a drink of wine. And before you know it, his penis is in your mouth, your anus, or your vagina, and you're starting to super glue him. You know what super glue is? Oxytocin. The oxytocin is a cuddle hormone that glues people who are on estrogen, that's young women before menopause, and older men. How do you think that young woman steals that husband from that nice middle-aged woman? Because he's on estrogen. Starting at 48, 49, 50, men's testosterone is going down. Yeah, they go to the doctor and take pills and do whatever. But the truth of the matter is, estrogen is a chemical that is very susceptible to dopamine stimulation. And dopamine is produced by making sex and love and making money. And so as he bonds in his maturity, or she bonds in her immaturity, that's taking up the freedom of choice, so that you become addicted to people instead of fall in love with people. So with that in mind, what do you want to do?
Well, I was thinking, I'm considering sending a where did you go text.
Got it. Let's see. A where do you go card. The last time you saw him was when?
Saturday.
This Saturday, past Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And you talked about meeting again this week sometime.
Well, he said he can't wait to see me again. And we hadn't talked about...
No, that's what I want. I give you permission to send him a text that says, we had a great time. You said we wanted to get together. Where did you go?
Yeah.
But okay, you got to do it like now, because you can't do it next week.
Yeah.
It has to be time sensitive. So ship the thing. Do you have his text?
Yes.
Okay. So what are you going to send?
Exactly what you said.
Okay.
Hey, we had a great time. I was curious to know, though, I'm in my late 30s and he is 50. So I was wondering how, like, men entering their feminine sort of impacts their pursuing.
They start at 50. And that's when you have to make sure that you respect him. Because he's going to have moments when he's going to cry in the movie. Or he's going to say, I see you still on the dating service. Why are you dating? And you say, because I'm not in a committed relationship. Do you want to be my boyfriend? Are you hearing what I'm saying?
Yes. Do you, does that impact like them reaching out? Because I've broken the rules a little bit and will text sometimes every two texts, which I know is reserved for girlfriends. But whenever I do that, he always says, oh, I was thinking about you and I wanted to text, but I didn't because there's always like he thought about it, but he didn't follow through.
I'll tell you what he wanted. He wanted to be chased by you.
Oh.
And what that does is you become the usable girl and he gets guilty for using you and leaving you. Remember, dear, men are not in love until they demonstrate it by giving, protecting, and cherishing you. We women are in love with one person. Who is it?
Ourselves.
ourselves. We've learned that when we give them free sex and free food and free money and free dates, that all we're doing is mothering them, nursing them, and we end up getting dumped when it's time for him to get a new mama.
Mm-hmm.
It's called ghosting.
Mm.
Friendship with perks. Have you? I want everybody that's listening to know this is in a book called Getting to I Do. I wrote that one in 1994, and it's still in the stores now. Got it?
Got it.
Have I given
Thank you,
you
so much,
the
man.
Rationale? What?
Yes. Yes, you have. Definitely.
Good. Happy hunting.
So no matter what age they are still the pursuer. Thank you, Dr. Allen.
Wait a minute. What did you say?
Oh, so no matter what age they are, they're still the pursuer.
No,
if I
that's
want to be
not
cherished.
True.
Oh.
If they want to be cherished, they will say, why didn't you call me? How come I always have to pay for our dates? Why do I go down on you, but you don't go down on me? Have you heard any of those?
No.
Good for you. Do you understand that when a man starts getting up into that 50 category, he wants to be mothered physically? I'm going to say something serious.
Okay.
Men need to be married more than we do in our 50s. We women, after we've had that marriage and had the kids, we go to school and become career women. Do you see what I mean? And often get a toy boy to be casually sexual with. Those are called cougar women.
Mm.
You see, nature wants older women to train younger men how to be good men. There's a movie, old movie named Victoria, about Queen Victoria when she was picking out a husband who ended up Albert. And it shows that women run the show spiritually if they want to have a good, solid life. But women that just want to be sexual are going to get used.
Mm-hmm.
And they blame the men. Mm-hmm. And they go to, what is that group, A2s, the, you know, women that don't like men because they use them sexually. I got news for you. Nature is designed to make babies for the planet. And I teach everything I know scientifically, not philosophically, not politically, not, you know, I base everything on science. Okay?
Okay.
So are you going to honor science?
Oh, absolutely.
Good.
This is so helpful.
Yes,
it
is.
Thank you so much, Dr. Allen.
Welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you, caller. Okay, that call-in number, 323-203-0815. And that's how you get to hop into the hot seat with Dr. Allen. Caller,
especially
you are
if you're
live
a man.
Yes, caller, you're live on the air, Dr. Allen. Do you have a question?
Yes, I do.
What is your question?
My question is the following. I'm calling from abroad. It's very late here. I hope you can, I can make sense when I talk. Basically, there is a man, and we were dating 4 years
no,
ago.
No, we were dating, or he was dating you.
He
did
was
you both chase me, each other, or did he court you?
By then, I didn't know your work, so I think I was chasing partly as well. So
okay,
yeah, it was.
So you were having like a that, friendship
yeah.
with perks. Were you having intercourse?
Yes, yeah.
Okay,
yes,
that's
yes,
a friendship with perks.
Yes, I know. By now, I know. I mean, we were dating a little bit, or he was dating me a little bit, and then at one point we had intercourse, only for a short time, and then I stopped because it didn't feel right.
Honey, you know how much it takes to start the Bartholomew glands to start producing the oxytocin? Once.
I know.
I
learned
body,
my lesson.
The body marries with oxytocin.
Yes, yes. So it was very painful. So I stopped it. And then I learned all about your work. So I applied to it. And he never wanted a relationship. But he comes back regularly. Like since
regularly,
4 years
every
now.
8 weeks, he comes back.
The first 3 years, he was coming back every 8 weeks or shorter. But now, it kind of, he pops up like after, I would say, a few months. Or sometimes, like now it was like half a year almost.
Honey.
And I'm
you are so secure in his life. He counts on you being available. And so when his body aches to get into your body, he'll come after you. But he has diversified and has got probably 5 women that he's doing these for. Do you understand?
Yes.
So
yes. I'm 100% sure that.
What?
I said I'm 100% sure that he has other women.
I'm going to tell you a story.
But I'm wondering why. Yeah.
A woman dated a man, then, and she gave him free sex. So for a while, he visited her regularly. And then she said, no more sex. And he said, who needs you? I've got other women. Goodbye. And he goes away. 2 years, 3 years later, he remembers her and the fact that she said, no more sex unless I'm your girlfriend or your fiance. And you know what he says? I'm going to go back and see if I can get her back. And you know what happens? Many, many, many women will not take him back because they are tired of being free this, free that.
Mm-hmm.
So people, men usually come back within 8 weeks. But when they get secure or they want different girls, they go away, but they often come back to see if you're still there and in love with them, which is bonding. And if mm-hmm. you are, he can do that. Do you realize he can do every 8 weeks for the rest of your life?
Yes. I mean, I'm over him now, but of course, when he comes back, he I don't know. I'm wondering why he's doing it, because it has been such a long time now. So
I want you to know, because your body is so bonded to him, that he comes back to stimulate your marriage. You remarry him every time you smell him after you've bonded to him. Every time you marry him, your body marries him.
Yes, I'm kind of, that's why I didn't see him anymore.
It's not seeing, it's smelling. We bond by smelling their chemistry, and it turns our body on. Our pituitary and our Bartholomew glands produce oxytocin, and that's like super glue.
Yes, I had to learn that in a bad way, yeah.
But the meantime,
so,
you're using up your life.
Yes, I know. I know.
So please join us. How old are you?
I just became 50.
I'm 87.
Yes, I know.
And I'm having more fun at 87 than I did when I was 35, because I follow God's laws better.
Yes. I was dating, but now I'm grieving because my mother got very sick. And so I stopped dating right now. And I'm trying to be with her as much as I can. Yeah.
I see. Can't you have dinner with a friend? Do you have anybody chasing you?
Yes, I have.
Is any man courting you? What?
Yeah, there are a few who are.
For what reason are you depriving yourself of being cherished mercifully and spiritually? Because whether you like it or not, your mother's not going to stay alive forever, and it would be nice if you had a couple of men interested in you.
Yes, there is two men who are interested in
me. Well, then why don't you give one Friday and one Sunday or Saturday? In other words, go to lunch. Duty date.
Because my mom, she has cancer, and she doesn't have a good it's a very aggressive cancer, so I don't think she will make it longer than half a year. So somehow
could you date once a month?
Yes, maybe I could do that, yeah.
Why don't you date once a month? Because if you don't let his penis in your mouth, anus, or vagina, your body says, ooh, that was fun, dinner. We got to be near somebody that stimulates the dopamine in our body, which is upper, and your body benefits. There's a wonderful book called When the Body Says No by Gabor Mate, M-A-T-E, umlaut,
yes,
which says you need to have a little bit of pleasure every day, whether it's a bubble bath or tea with a boyfriend. You need a little bit of pleasure to produce the dopamine that will keep your body flourishing.
Yes, okay.
Are you willing?
Yes. I will date once a month, and it has to be like three men, right?
So it will be three. Excellent. That's lovely. and go through go through an In-N-Out burger. You don't have to sit down at a big lunch.
Yeah.
Have a little picnic in the car or at a bench.
Mm-hmm.
Your body needs pleasure. Yeah.
That's true. Yeah, I'm missing pleasure. Yeah.
Well, then, would you please do it?
I would start to do it. Yes, thank you so much for reminding.
Good. Call again.
Yes. Yes, I will.
All right.
Have a lovely
evening.
Bye.
And read the book, Getting to I Do.
I got it. Yeah. I will.
Good.
Thank you, caller.
Thank you, Dr. Pat. Thank you.
Call again. Bye-bye. Okay. I want to remind everybody how you find those books and those other magnificent things that Dr. Allen has put together is www.wantinstitute.com. Caller, you're live on the air with Dr. Allen. Do you have a question?
Yeah, well, I just wanted to acknowledge Dr. Pat and say thank you. I've been following her and her work for 10 years, probably about now, and I can't tell you how much it helps. I'm definitely an alpha woman, male energy, who's worked really hard to at least fake my beta, but I really become, in my feminine, and I appreciate all that she's taught us about what real men do. I'm finally in a relationship with a alpha real man, and it's just awesome. And because she told me us, she's educated us about how those men behave, especially when they want a long-term relationship.
Oops, phone went away.
And so forth and so on. So I just want to say
thank you so much. Thank you for saying this so that someone else might believe you and read the book and call on the phone and get what they want out of life.
Exactly. It took me a lot of practice because it was major behavioral changes for me, but I got tired of the 2 years of pain after, of having that casual sex and thinking and being lied to. And everything you say is absolutely spot on. The 8 weeks, I don't know, whatever it is you say, I'm constantly preaching your word because it's so accurate and results-oriented. So thank you for all the tools.
I believe in casual sex, holding hands, putting an arm around.
Right.
Sex is what your body touches, smells, looks at. Making love is more than that. It's physical, mental, and emotional. You're making love. I call intercourse God's moment. That's the only time we get to make babies like God does.
Yep. Yeah.
So please,
beautiful,
have casual sex, hand holding, a little kiss on the cheek, whatever. But watch out for making love, because that's where trouble can begin if you misuse. More people get sick and die over misused sex than almost anything.
Wow.
Amazing. Okay.
Well, it's definitely a spiritual act when you make love with somebody and it comes, and you're absolutely right. You're one with God when the two of you are making love. It's just amazing. And it's the difference. It just makes life worth living, that's for sure. It's amazing.
You're not kidding. You're not kidding. And don't forget the last book. It's A Man's World and a Woman's Universe.
Yes, that's a great book. It actually, you're so brilliant. It's you got to really sit and think about what you say when you write. You really compacted
It takes four readings to get it.
Yeah,
I'm a very What?
I said I would believe that. Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
But once you get it, it changes your life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Well, you've changed
Thank
mine.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Good,
Thank
good,
you.
Good. Keep it up.
You too. Thanks.
Thank
Bye.
You, caller. Bye-bye. Okay. So, we have a video or an audio link that you can go to. It's www.drpatallen.com, and that's where you will hear chemistry, compatibility, and communication. And it's free right now on our website. Caller, you're live with Dr. Allen. Do you have a question?
I do have a question. Hello, Kelly. Hello, Dr. Allen.
Hello.
I have a question. So it's a silly one, maybe.
Don't talk like that. It's not a silly one. You're a precious human being, and everything you do enhances that or bombs it. So let's see what you're doing.
I have a great question. You are correct. I'm also Russian, and if I don't sell clothes once in a while, I just don't exist. It's like I don't exist.
Okay.
I have been doing a lot of research lately on just emotions and everything, and I came across something that's called borderline personality disorder, and now I think I have
it.
Could you explain that one? Because a lot of symptoms that kind of match me, and the way the psychologist explained how these people grow up in very chaotic families with no structure, no nothing, that's me. So I'm kind of...
Okay.
Would you?
Number one, in the first month of life, babies vibrate off of the tone of voice, looks in the eyes, touching from whoever is loving them. Mm-hmm. They are not able to use words.
Correct.
So for a month, you can really. Now, if you get touched and cuddled and loved and sung to, by the age of 3, you are ready to start using words. Do you know that babies need to hear language in their family in order to create the sound with their mouth?
Oh, wow. So if they don't hear it, they won't do it?
If they're not dealt with, if they're used violently, children that are raised in a painful home believe that norepinephrine, which is a chemistry, is normal, and dopamine is a lie. So these people believe only people that are borderlines, who are one day nice and one day mean. Do you see?
Yes. So, and I'm a norepinephrine addict. Thanks to you, I know that, and I'm desensitizing myself all the time.
And that's wonderful. Because that what you're talking about is, in each division, for example, the first month, if you don't get touched, babies will die of not being touched. The book on that is Ashley Montague's book, Touching. If a baby doesn't hear the dialect, is adopted out, or doesn't hear the dialect of the family, it cannot use it like English versus Japanese. And if a baby is raised in a painful place, it believes in pain. And there's a book, especially for women, A Taste for Pain by Maria Marcos. So that when you go to therapy, your therapist uses words in order to rewire your script, which has been put into your nervous system, the Broca, which mm-hmm. is in the left hemisphere in your brain. And it's the one that teaches you or uses language you've learned. Beware of your thoughts, for they become words. Beware of your words, for they become habits. Mm-hmm. Beware of your habits, they become your character, masculine, feminine. Beware of your character, it becomes your destiny. Making money, being physically well or ill, and in every relationship that is founded in love, which mm-hmm. makes you vulnerable, is going to make you available to people with personality disorders like schizoaffective disorder. That's a person
what is
who
that
separates
one?
What?
And what? Which one is that one?
That one is schizoaffective. It's where you separate your feelings from your thinking. A borderline personality disorder is a moral person one day and an immoral person the next day. You can't believe what they're doing.
Yeah. Well, okay. It's just not so much anymore, but before, like, I definitely had a very broken moral compass. Like, I didn't think twice to do some things that a normal person would be like, maybe I shouldn't be doing this. Not like I don't steal, I don't do any of that stuff, but, like, in my personal life, I had, you know, I came to you initially because I was in pain, because I was a mistress to a married man, but then at the same time, I had boyfriends, and I didn't think it was a problem. And I said, well, that's my personal life. I don't do that anymore, thanks to you. But
that's
I didn't
so
think,
good.
I didn't think,
that's so good.
Yeah. Yeah. You so see? Not only did I mean, I cheated on basically everyone. The first relationship I had after I broke up with a man, with a married man, and I was 33, that was my first pretty much ever normal relationship. Didn't work out, but I didn't cheat on him. It was healthy. He was available. We weren't compatible at the end, but I was so proud of myself. I'm like, I can do this. Thanks
good,
to you.
Good, 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 good.
Thanks to you. Yeah.
Well, no, thanks to you. I talk to a lot of people and a lot do not do what I say.
I do most of what you say. So thanks to both of us. But with borderline, so what do I... I appreciate you so very much, Dr. Allen. I've said this before, too. If I can divide my life into before and after I met you. In many,
have
many,
you
many...
Have read A Man's World and a Woman's Universe?
Yes, I have.
Okay. That one
I've read
is...
all of them.
That's wonderful. That is truly wonderful. Period. So,
oh,
what
and
can
you know
I
what?
For you? What?
Oh, yeah. So, I was seeing someone, went on dates with a few dates with this man, and I was crazy about him. And then he stopped calling me. And after a few weeks, I stopped caring. This is also amazing. Because for me, I'm like, well, he doesn't want me, so what?
What you did is you detoxed off of his chemistry.
Yep. Yeah. It works.
That's because you could separate your thinking from your feelings.
Oh, is that isn't that the borderline?
Affective. What?
Oh, what? Oh, so that's no. I mean, I felt bad for a while, but then I stopped feeling bad. One day, magically,
okay,
I woke
you
up
stopped
like,
it.
Oh, it's fine.
Well, then you're a recovering human being. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Okay.
So with
can I
borderline,
do anything else for you?
Yeah, because I was thinking, so what are the, like, because what I saw in the symptoms of borderline is that the person kind of gets, like, fractioned, I guess. Like, a lot of times...
The person is scripted. Have you ever read, have you ever done your script?
I have with you, yeah. Yeah. Okay. That was the first thing we've ever done.
Okay. So when you're scripted by family, church, culture, whatever, you're wired for pathology.
Mm.
And so what you've got to do is you've got to, as I just said, beware of your thoughts, words, deeds, you know, the whole thing. You have to change your behavior to rewire your nervous system.
Oh, so okay. So even if I do have it, what I'm doing, the cognitive behavioral therapy that I've done with you, that's going to be fine either way, right?
It's going to get fixed. Cognitive behavioral therapy is recognized, and another person, Marsha Linehan, does dialectical behavioral therapy, which is one in which you basically work with a therapist or a coach or a spiritual director, you see, in replacing the father and the mother that scripted you to speak and think in a non-healthy way.
Mm-hmm.
Eric Byrne was a cognitive behavioral therapist. And it's a very successful form of brain manipulation. There's even a new form of trauma treatment called TMS. EMDR used to be our only real impacting behavior mod that would change your brain. Now we have one, transcranial electromagnetic stimulation. So what they
that
do
one sounds
is
awesome.
They what?
That one sounds very awesome. I googled it. I think it's very expensive though.
Have you contacted? Have you read it? Done anything about it?
No, I want to do. I still want to do EMDR. I have.
Yes, please do.
Instances.
It's good. It's good. It's good.
Yeah.
What state do you live in?
I'm in Washington, and I found that you actually, you know, I went to Jeffrey White when I was in California visiting.
That's beautiful.
And
he found EMDR. He's retiring now. What?
Oh, he's retiring now. Bummer. I just thought
he
maybe I could go there for
retiring.
A few weeks. Oh. But he found me a few specialists here because I'm in Seattle.
Now, I want you to know where to find the rest of them. Austin, Texas. They have the International Center for EMDR. If anyone wants to be de-traumatized from those first 3 years of pain training, called the EMDR Center in Austin, Texas.
What if, so I have two instances where I was traumatized pretty badly physically, but it was post the 3 year mark. It will help with that too, right?
Everything will help.
Uh-huh.
Anything, any effort to change any part of you, from chemistry to neurobiology to whatever, is going to help you on your path of self-individualization or actualization.
Growing.
What?
Yeah, because I don't think I'm individualized yet. That's what I've realized, because I kind of look at my life.
Do you want to read a book that is recognized? Read Toward a Psychology of Being by Abraham Maslow.
I think I even have it, because I bought a bunch of books that you recommended, and they're
That one is biggie. Abraham Maslow talks about individuation and actualizing yourself, or he puts it in smaller terms with being a deficient person, a D person,
mm-hmm.
or a being person. You're either a D or a B. And that book really talks about individuating, actualizing. It even puts down the 8 price tag events that occur when you change from ill to well.
Mm.
Nobody likes people changing. So when you become an individual, they feel neglected.
Yeah, I have serious issues with my mother, actually. She thinks that you are the devil, and then you made me angry. And I said, Mom, no one made me angry. I'm just less comfortable for you now, and you don't like it. She didn't like that either.
Okay, that's all right. She's living in her script.
Yeah.
And by the way, script people live by Claude Steiner is so interesting in a transactional analytical way. It's really good.
I think I have that one too. I need to read, because I've read the books that you wrote, and I've read probably 3 or 4 books out of all the books that you recommend, but I bought a lot more than that. So it's just sitting. I have my own personal Dr. Allen library at home. It's so
and
great.
You know what? That can end up, I've had people that have gone into college classrooms and taken over the class.
The
teacher and the students. It's really an impressive thing. So have we done our thing here?
Yes, yes, yes. I'm calm now. Yeah. Awesome.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks, y'all.
Bye.
Bye, Kelly.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Dr. Allen. Bye.
Okay, that is one of our regular callers, and she's a delight. Let's see what we've got coming up, and I will remind everybody, 323-203-0815 to get in the hot seat with Dr. Allen. Okay, looks like Sam is getting us another call through the switchboard.
Okay.
Wonderful. Father, you are live on the air. You must turn your radio down and there.
Yeah, I have a question about alpha men that are intense in the workplace, but they are essentially, as you call them, Pat, women with penises that want
yes,
to be chased.
That's right. They go home to a wife that's very masculine and runs the show at home, and he loves it. But when he goes to work, he's a man. When he goes home, he's a woman.
Uh-huh.
Everybody's both. Men have masculine bodies, but they have feminine souls called the anima. Women have feminine bodies, but they have masculine souls called the animus. And Carl Jung's wife, Emma, wrote a book called Anima, Animus, if you want to read about it.
Okay, yeah, I definitely want to understand it better because I'm experiencing men that are running multi-million-dollar businesses that are even running around saying things like, oh, I'm an alpha, you know, I shoot guns, this and that. But then in the romantic area, they want to be chased. They want to be mothered.
Honey,
they are not
welcome
alphas.
To America.
I feel like they're all doing a bait and switch.
There's
on
a
me.
Wonderful book called The War Against Boys by a therapist named Summers. don't talk to me like that. Don't act like a little bully, like that little boy down the street. I want you to dress nice and be clean. Goodbye, balls. Oh, there's a wonderful book. There's a wonderful book called Puer Aeternus by Maria von France. And she was a protege of Carl Jung. So that's the effect of on a son of an over-mothering mother. Boys need to be weaned by 10. That means they have to be respected. Son, I want to talk to you about your classes and your grades. When would it be convenient for you to listen? I don't want to ever listen to you. Well, that's fine. But that basically puts off buying you a car for college. You see what she was doing and what he was doing? She was telling him the price tag for becoming a girl. Oof. There are 4 people in every relationship, whether it's parenting or brother and sister. There's 2 men and 2 women, whether they're straight, whether they're gay. There's 4 people in every relationship. But when you're in an intimate relationship, if I've got 2 men, all they do is fight. If I've got 2 women, all they do is suck off of each other. And so in order to really relate well, you have to compliment. I think, how do you feel? What can I do to help us feel better? I don't feel very good. What do you think about doing this? And what can I do to help you and I do better? You see the difference?
Mm-hmm.
That's my work. Androgynous semantic syntactical realignment.
So how do us ladies deal with these women with penises? Because I thought a feminine man would be maybe somebody like in the arts that was expressed very feminine exterior and wanted to be mothered. But
men that are raised to be girls make wonderful fathers, but wives generally have to become very masculine to live with them.
So how do us women spot it when on the outside we see somebody that has the exterior, even the deep voice, like a masculine alpha, but they're really a woman? wanting to be chased all
the
time.
You
that.
Don't
how
relate
do
to
that?
Them because you ignore them and go with people that you like. Women get what they want by being happy in their body.
Is this from their mother wounds? Why is this the case where there's you could see somebody on the exterior look a specific way and act a specific way, but they really are just
running around? You can't do therapy on anybody without permission. You have to say, I have some ideas about you that I want to share, but they might be sensitive. So do you want me to share them or not? You must not mother people without their permission. That's how people get scripted when they're young. And so if somebody comes along and duplicates that particular procedure, you extend the scripting.
Yeah, not interested in mothering in any way, shape, or form. Just wondering how us ladies that are out there looking for an actual real alpha, a real man, how to just beware of these women in men's suits.
I understand
playing
that.
Halloween.
Do you pick with your eyes for sex or do you pick with your ears for money? We're all trying to get laid or paid. The two highest dopamine productions are done with sexual behavior and money gambling behavior. You want to get laid or paid?
Paid.
Okay. Then you find a man you respect and you respect him. You don't insult him.
Yep.
Raise your right hand.
Yep. Okay.
I promise.
I promise.
On my honor.
On my honor.
To respect the man I love.
To respect the man I love.
Even if I think I'm smarter.
Even if I think I'm smarter.
And could do it better.
And can do it better.
Furthermore.
Furthermore.
I promise.
I promise.
Not to teach, preach, bitch, moan, or question him.
Not to teach, preach, bitch, moan, or question him.
Unless I've got an appointment.
Unless I have an appointment.
Unless I have to call the police.
Unless I have to call the police.
Or a medical doctor.
Or a medical doctor.
Or a lawyer to sue him.
Or a lawyer to sue him.
How do you like that?
Love it. Sounds good. Good.
It is good.
Thank you, Dr. Pat.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Call again. Bye.
Okay.
Thank you, caller. Okay, we've got some more calls in our queue. Sam is going to get us one. And I want to remind everybody that we are here live on Thursday. That's when you get to talk to us. But LA Talk Radio plays us on other times, and you can always see our archives, listen to our archives at latalkradio.com. Caller, you are live on the air with Dr. Allen. Do you have a question?
I do. And it's a question I think I know the answer to about chafing, okay. But I want to ask anyway. So I called in recently. I recently went through a breakup in June. It was an on and off relationship for about a year and a half. And okay. I finally sent him the hi bye letter, which I got approved by you. And he responded lovingly. Yes, so he responded lovingly, but he did say he's trying to move on and trying to get happy. And I just wrote him back saying I thanked him for the reply and that I'd support him. So we used to play an online Scrabble game all the time. And when we broke up, I ended all of our games because I was mad. And so I wanted to know if it would be chafing to start one of the games with him again, which I think it probably is, but I just wanted to know for sure.
No, it isn't, because it's not romantic. The romance is over.
Okay, so
you're not in that relationship. He's just a friend.
Okay.
Is that true or not true?
It's true. I do still have feelings for him.
Oh, did he dump you or did you dump him?
Well, we got into a fight and left each other.
I know you did, but who dumped who?
I would say I probably in the moment broke up with him.
That means you can't reach out to him unless you know that's chasing. If he dumped you, then you could ask for the gains back.
But here's the thing. So we broke, it was really mutual because the fight was so bad. But then I wrote
no,
him
darling,
a high.
No, if you haven't worked through it, you're thinking of a way to get through it through this game thing. You're working on closing or opening this relationship again.
Right.
Do you want to open it?
Right.
Do you want to open it?
Yes. Yes, I do.
then what I want you to do is make an appointment or write them a note and say that you miss your games of Scrabble, was that?
Yeah, it was online Scrabble.
Okay. And would he be willing to be friends over the games?
Okay.
What was the fight over?
Well, the fight was really over me not being over the past, but it got triggered when he checked out another woman in front of me. And then it just brought back old times of when I was still holding on to a mistake he made, a few mistakes he made.
I understand that. So you guys destroyed the relationship, but not the Scrabble game. So you have the right to treat him like an ex-boyfriend. As long as you realize you're inviting him to fall back in love with you.
Well, I want him to fall back in love with me.
Well, this is how you're doing it.
Okay, so here's my question. I wrote him a hi-bye letter, I think about 2 weeks ago. He said he loved it, but he said he was trying to move on and get happy. So
why don't you send him a note that says, I only want to play Scrabble on computer or wherever you do it. I don't want a date.
So I would just write him a note and say, miss our Scrabble games. Are you open to playing those again?
And not dating.
Why would I throw that in there?
Because that would give him the opportunity to chase you.
Okay, so would you be willing to play those as friends? Can I say that?
Yes, there, that's it.
Okay.
You can't call him and say, I want to manipulate you into falling in love with me playing Scrabble. Want to do it? See what I mean?
Well, then my next question is, I wrote him the hi-bye letter 2 weeks ago, so if I interject during what could be an eight-week period about us playing Scrabble games, does that mess that up or no?
It messes up the romance part, but not the creation of the new Scrabble part.
Well, I don't want to mess up romance, Dr. Allen.
Then why don't you wait till the 8 weeks are done and then offer the Scrabble?
Okay. So basically
give him 8 weeks to come back based on that last hi-bye and then move it into, I know we're done romantically, but I miss our games.
Okay.
Are you willing to do that?
Yes, I am willing to do that.
Well, that's good.
And you're saying that it's a potential for an invitation for him to ease up with me again.
Yes, because maybe you've changed something that allows him to come close to you again. You may have been disrespectful. I was disrespectful. Well, if you were disrespectful, he kicked you out.
Yeah.
Is your mother disrespectful?
She was. She was, yeah.
So that's where you learned it.
Right.
So, sir, that makes you a man, you know.
Well, no, I'm not a man anymore. I was a man at that time, but I'm a woman again.
I know that, but what I've given you right now is a way to let him decide whether he wants to be with you romantically or he's wanting to play the games with you as long as you don't try to seduce him.
Okay. And then, you know, we broke up end of June and we were talking about getting married and he was planning to propose this summer, which didn't happen, obviously. But I have seen on social media, it looks like he may be starting to either date someone or play house with someone. I just don't understand how men move.
Now, you know what you're doing now? Now you're talking about, I want to chase him.
No, I actually wanted to know, like, how a man moves on so quickly, emotionally.
Because he's right-handed. He is right-handed, isn't he?
Yes.
That means he's in his left lobe or his right lobe at any time.
Right.
We women and left-handed men, ambidextrous men, biologically gay men, have bigger corpus callosums between the two lobes in our brain, and that allows us to mix our thoughts and feelings. You just demonstrated shifting from your left lobe to play Scrabble with him over to your right lobe to seduce him.
What part of this is seducing him? Which part is
part of seducing him is you wanting to date, not just Scrabble.
I see what you're saying. Okay, yeah.
Say it back to me so I know you got it.
So because I'm able to mix my thoughts and feelings, I genuinely do miss us playing Scrabble, but I also see it as an opening to invite him to chase me again. So that's the mixture of that.
Or as opposed to let you chase him.
Right, which I'm not going to do.
Okay. Then you're on the way to learning more about this work, you know, for your sake.
So you're saying that a right-handed man can move on very quickly?
Very quickly. Boy, do they do that. You just betray a right-handed man, and he sees you with his best friend or whatever there, you're dead.
What if you were disrespectful, but you did not betray him?
Depends on how mad he got.
Okay.
Each person has their own, you know, their own... What should I say? What they can handle. Some people temperamentally, Myers-Briggs, temperamentally, there are people that can put up with garbage forever. And there are people that can't put up with hookups, hiccups.
We have been through something similar in the past, where he actually got another girlfriend for a little bit, but then he came back.
That's right.
So
after you do the circles with the 8 weeks, if you split longer than 8 weeks, they can come back at 3 years. Lots of people do that.
Does that mean that they were still in love with you during that time or no?
They weren't in love with you. You didn't fit their life goals. And so it fell apart. But then you changed, cleaned up your act or whatever you did, and you gave it another shot.
Okay. All right.
Is that it?
Thank you. I get it. So if I make it clear after the 8 weeks, of, like I'm going to give him his full 8 weeks to ruminate from the high buy. But then after from them, I can make it clear that we're going to, if he wants to play Scrabble as friends.
Yes, that's right.
Okay. Thank you.
Welcome.
Bye.
Thank you, caller. Bye. Good luck.
Thank you.
Hope she will follow up with us and let us know what happens. Okay, we've got another call coming in. Sam at the switchboard is going to get that call for us so we can put someone in a hot seat, Dr. Allen. Again, the call-in number. I said we're going to get another call coming here. We're putting them in the hot seat.
Okay, we'll do another call.
Okay. caller. You're live on the air with Dr. Allen. Do you have a question?
Yeah, I have a question, Dr. Allen.
Yes.
So I'm in the process of switching careers, and it's kind of stressful, but I'm going through that process. And I know that I, you know, moving forward.
What is she saying, Kelly? I don't quite hear her
I'm having a difficult time too. Caller, can you speak closer into your phone?
Is this better?
We can barely hear you. So if you're like on a mic, that's
hello. Better?
Perfect. Yes.
Okay. Oh, I was using my headphones. Anyway, so Dr. Allen, I'm leaving a job right now and I'm transitioning out, and you know, it's kind of a stressful time, but I'm doing what I need to do to get out of that job. And I know And moving forward, I know I do not want to be a career woman, but I do want to build something to support myself, you know.
Well, that's a woman with a career. That means from 9 to 5, you're a man, and from 5 till what time you wake up in the morning, you're a woman. Everybody's
right.
Both male and female. You can either be a man or woman with a career on the side in second place, or there are many, many people that are, first of all, women and men, and then careers.
Right, yeah. So
the only thing you've got to do is you've got to watch your language. And that's what the book, The World of Men and Women of the Universe, is got three divisions in there, I-ness, we-ness, us-ness. And that gives the thoughts and tools for if you're trying to develop your individual nature, that might be more like career woman.
Right.
If you have a kid, it might be us. You might be having to deal with the fact that you're a family and you don't have a husband. In other words, the tools are described in that book.
Okay, I'm going to have to read it again with a fresh perspective. I might see some new things.
You probably didn't even read I-ness, we-ness, us-ness, because you sound but that's a part of it. The book is divided into 4 sections. One section is my version of the Mideast Western issue, which I love, page 1 to 23. Read it.
Well,
I'm proud of it. And then it goes into I-ness. And then it goes into we-ness. And then it goes into us-ness. Family.
So that part of the we and the us, so I want to get out, you know, and find a man who wants to build a family. And I'm just kind of a little anxious about going out there because I used to do the whole online
thing. Well, if you're going out there, remember, you either appeal to his eyes or his ears. If you appeal to his eyes, you dress for sex. If you appeal to his ears, you brag about your career goals, what you're doing. And boy, could you set up a business with him? You see what I mean?
Right. Yeah. So I'm trying to do the, you know, looking nice when I go out, the 5-second rule, all of that. I'm doing all of that. I haven't.
But are you doing it based on guys that you like to look at, or guys that you want to hear describe what they want from you? I want a woman who can pay her own bills. I want a woman. That's a man who wants a career woman.
Yeah, I think I've been looking with my eyes. I've been
smiling.
If you're
looking with your eyes, then you've got to find a man that's picking you with his ears. How much money?
I don't want that.
Is that your car? No. Do you have that house?
Oh, yeah. I've had that before, and it's...
I need somebody to respect, and I need somebody to cherish. I don't care who does it, because both of us can do it.
I want to be cherished, so if I want to be cherished, who should I be looking at when I'm trying to do the five-second?
You should be looking at the person who's making money and may be shy, may be busy, and you put up with it because he's got money.
Okay.
Read the sections in the book. What?
No, I was just trying to think of an example.
If
of a
you
place
watch,
to go.
Watch this. If you want to be cherished, you've got to have somebody you respect. But the cost of that is they come home tired, can't make love all the time. If you want to be cherished, you have to be with somebody that wants to be respected. If you want to be respected as a career woman, you have to find a man that's willing to do dishes, cook, and be a woman.
No. No. No, I want a man that wants to be respected.
Okay, then guess what?
Yeah.
You may not like the fact that he's tired when he comes home, that he wants you to have a meal ready for him because that's where he gathers up his energy. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, and that's what I want to do. I'm excited
A woman. And gay guys have masculine and feminine combo, and gay girls do the same thing. Two men may have the same body, but they can't have the same, I don't want. That's competitive.
Right.
Think of waltzing and discoing, you see? Mm-hmm. When you're discoing, you're both male and you're both female.
Right.
When you're slam dancing, you're fighting it out. I'm male, you're male. If you're waltzing, one of you is the female and one of you is the male.
Right. Okay. I've had a couple of years now of practicing that, so I feel pretty good. It's just the trying to meet them, I guess, the old-fashioned way of presenting instead of doing the online thing.
Yes, but women were taught not to be career women in the old days. Now women are taught to be career women.
Right.
You see, in the old days, men did not want to be cherished. They wanted to be respected. Now, 18% of the marriages are headed up with career women married to men that are men with families. They may be writing a book. They may be painting paintings. But they are definitely taking care of the home.
Yeah, I see that with a couple of my friends and actually family, too, where the man is the feminine in the house. And
I got news for you. She's lucky to have him. She's lucky to have him. It used to be that women had to be career women and men and career. They had to be both male and female equally. And that super mom.
And with that, I'm going to have to pop in here because we are out of time. Thank you, caller. We hope you'll call again. Dr. Allen, what do you have to say real quick before we go?
The only way you know you love yourself
or anybody else are with the contracts and commitments you make and keep. We've lost Dr. Allen, but we're out of time, so we're going to go. We love you, and we will be back next week. Until then, take care. Bye-bye.
You're listening to On the Air with Dr. Pat Allen, Empowered Communication, right here on LA Talk Radio.